Fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, the end of the first full week of March 2017. It is the 10th day of March 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room, where I'm being told to throw the third switch. The third switch is thrown. We are streaming merrily away here. And hopefully the signal itself will reach at some point in time in the near future. If not, I'll just have to throw a conniption. We don't want that, do we? Of course not. But if you'd like to jump into the chat room, head over to headonradionetwork.com and pick yourself out a screen name and a password under the tab chat room. And I have found that, yes, it works best with Internet Explorer 11, I presume it is. If it's not working for you on some other platform, try that. Ah, good. Good. Thank you, folks, letting me know that, yes, we are, in fact, broadcasting it. You know, that's the thing with the latency of the Internet. It takes a while sometimes for the packets to pass and the electrons to electrate and the protons to prostate and whatever. Yeah, but you'll be met by Jug of Punch and Jules and Labor Man and Steve from Georgistan, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, since it was a springtime 75-degree day in Northern California today, decided, in fact, to fold space and become Man Cave. Yes, this is a listener-supported, broadcast operation. I'm also told, by the way, by Sparky, that Firefox 49 works with Java and the chat room. But this is a listener-supported operation. We try to raise $200 every evening to make sure that we can keep the bills paid, some of which I did yesterday and some of which I did today. Rather a lot, as a matter of fact, since we've been able to catch up with you know, the deficit created by last week and the rickety old coal-fired grid grinding to a halt. But we try to raise $200, and lo and behold, shortly before airtime, I got a note from our buddy Tom in an effort to make it all the more easy for this Friday on the Front Porch edition of The Horn. Subject line, Suffer and Sycophants Challenge. Hi, Bob. Let's call this a suffer and sycophants challenge, for $100. In other words, if we get $100 in contributions this evening, Tom will double it, and we will have met the fundraising goal for the evening. Tom continues. Note to Andy: piss off. Don't waste my time. I'm starting to take it personally. Signed, Tom, in the progressive paradise of Richmond, California. And, you know, that's just what comes of, you know, snotty sparkle ponyism, where everyone is wrong except for, you know, you get it. So thank you very kindly for the challenge, Tom. Thank you very much, and hopefully people will respond by going over to headonradionetwork.com. and clicking the contribute tab, and then putting in some number. New subscribers are always welcome. Really, really welcome, because that's how we make up shortfalls. That's how we wound up just having to raise $200 this evening, because our subscribers were there last night, overnight, this morning, and therefore we didn't have a deficit. And so we can just go forward raising $200 this evening. Thank you very, very much, Tom, and thank you to our subscribers, one and all. And so, go over to headonradionetwork.com, hit the contribute tab, and put in a number, maybe click the make this a recurring monthly donation box, and go from there. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Okay. Now, it is Friday on the front porch. You know how that works. Friday on the front porch is that special day every week when we gather together in the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable, and we engage in conversation about whatever is on folks' minds. No rules, no nothing. Just it's not quite a free for all, but it is a rousing conversation. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, then by all means, feel free if you'd like to participate this evening. One, you need Skype. Skype is the simplest way to go about doing all of this. Load Skype on your computer, set yourself up a screen name and a password. Really? A chainsaw? You guys hear the chainsaw? It's either a chainsaw or a dirt bike in very bad shape. Oh, spring comes to Appalachia, right? Set up Skype and send a contact request on Skype, not to me. If you want to call me, call the program during the regular broadcast week, Monday through Thursday. Yeah, go ahead and add me, Bob Kincaid Horn. But for purposes of Friday on the Front Porch, you're going to want to add, as a contact, Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, because Sparky, the longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, is also the longtime inveterate Horn Malloy Skype chat moderator. So send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail and help you. I hate that chainsaw. I'm glad y'all can't hear it. And he'll show you how to get into the group. If you absolutely, positively cannot figure out how to use Skype, then we do maintain the stress line. It works for some, not for others. One of these days we'll sort out the hinks and kinks and maybe get that worked around. But that number, of course, is 304-663-4676. And again, we will we'll fire it all up in about 50 minutes or so. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten that out of the way too. Oh, where to start? How about a legal update? There was news out of Oregon today. Finally, a couple of the ne'er-do-well dead-enders who participated in the terrorist attack on the Mahler National Wildlife Refuge got convicted of something. Yay. Jason Patrick of Georgia and Daryl Thorne of Washington State were found guilty by a jury of conspiring to prevent federal workers from doing their jobs at the refuge. Meanwhile, Dwayne Emmer, E-H-M-E-R, of Oregon and Jake Ryan of Montana, they got to take a walk. They all did the same thing, but the jury said, yeah, they conspired. No, they didn't. No telling what the basis for that decision-making process was. I give up on those juries. There was also a conviction. Daryl Thorne was convicted of possessing a firearm in a federal facility. On the other hand, Jason Patrick and Jake Ryan were acquitted of the very same charge. Again, sorted out. If you can sort it out, you're better than I. Because they were all running around carrying guns. Each and every one of them prevented federal workers from being able to do their federal jobs. But I guess we'll just have to take our little victories where we can get them. And here's hoping that there will be a long and meaningful sentence that will afford these two constitutionalists, goobers, a healthy opportunity to consider the stupidity of their ways. Mm-hmm. Staying in Oregon, this story comes out of Salem, Oregon, which immediately caused me to think back to the rousing discussions that Dr. Bill had a year or more ago about a short story by Ursula K. Le Guin called The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas. If you've never read it, it is well worth the effort. And I highly recommend it as being, it's thought-provoking. It's absolutely thought-provoking. I'm not going to ruin it if you've never read it before. But suffice to say that the town of Omelas is a utopia, and Ursula K. Le Guin got the idea for Omelas, at least the name of the place, when she read a signpost for Salem, Oregon, backwards. The O of Oregon, and then M-E-L-A-S for Salem spelled backwards, Omelas. What's that got to do with anything? Well, the story comes out of Salem, Oregon, where this past Tuesday, a 52-year-old man by the name of Jason Kendall was arrested. Jason Kendall began having a purple polka-dotted blue screaming right-wing God-fearing upstanding Bible-believing Christ-centered evangelical fundamentalist homosexual hissy in a restaurant in Salem, Oregon. And much as was the case with what happened in Olathe, Kansas, Jason Kendall, after having his hissy, was asked to damn well leave the premises of the establishment. Just like the man in Kansas who was asked to leave the premises there, he left, and the guy in Olathe, Kansas, came back with a gun and blew away a man of Indian ethnicity. Well, in this case, Jason Kendall is alleged to have left the restaurant and then come back a few minutes later and started beating his victim over the head with a pipe, screaming, "Get out of America! Get out of America!" Now, the victim had not said a word to Jason Kendall. He had certainly not assaulted him or upbraided him or engaged him in any wise. But upon being interviewed, Jason Kendall said he saw an evil totem. That's a quote. An evil totem with Arabic writing upon it, and he chucked it at his victim. He went on to describe his victim, who was Arabic, as a Saddam Hussein-looking guy. And then went on to explain to the authorities that he was pretty sure that a woman that he saw in the restaurant was a slave. And that he went in there to tell her that she was, in fact, free to leave. And then bashed the Arabic man in the head with a pipe. Mercifully, the victim survived. Meanwhile, 52-year-old patriot Jason Kendall has been charged with felony assault, unlawful use of a weapon, and misdemeanor intimidation. Wow! You scream, "Get out of America," and hit somebody in the head with a pipe, and somehow that's still a misdemeanor? Might be time for the legislature to revisit that there statute. Okay, some others are hearing the chainsaw. Steve from Georgistan, I said, "I think that's your phone buzzing from a text that's bleeding through." No. No, that's chainsaw. In case people didn't know, and this comes as a shock to me, after the presidential election in November 2016, of all the states in the union, Oregon led the country in the number of hate crime incidents per capita. 65 hate crimes were reported to the FBI for 2015. But Portland didn't report any data at all. 12% of Oregon's agencies didn't file a single hate crime report for 2015. Yeah. You know, you really do have to exist at a heightened rate, a heightened plane of awareness now. You have to be aware of your surroundings. Because you never know when one of these neo-Nazi Klan sympathizers screaming, "Get out of America, you Arab!" is going to come after you with a gun or a knife or a machete or a pipe. Yeah. And it's not slowing down. I saw a news report earlier today. Donald Trump spent more time tweeting mean shit at Kristen Stewart when she broke up with her boyfriend than he did speaking out against hate and anti-Semitism, which might explain why the Trumpiest county in America, Maricopa County in Arizona, recently played host to a gathering of hundreds of people from the general area, a bunch of militia creeps armed to the teeth, white nationalists, you know, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, that bunch. And yeah, some of their elected officials. That was last weekend on the March 4, the numeral 4, March 4th was in March for Trump. Arizona Congressman Anthony Kern showed up. He said, I heard lock her up, and we still need to pursue that. If you don't like it here, go to Syria. Go to someplace else. That was one of the knuckle walkers, knuckle breathers, mouth walkers in the crowd. Another asshole hollered, I don't want them as a veteran. I don't want them. Let them go back home. If they got a problem, let Saudi Arabia take care of them. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there were some cameras there, cameras from the real news. And you know how it is with a neo-Nazi or a Klansman, skinhead, racist, Trumpanzee freak, stick a camera in front of them, and they'll tell you exactly where they are, this from the real news.
On March 4th, supporters of President Donald Trump gathered in Phoenix, Arizona at the state capitol as part of a nationwide march for Trump.
And I heard, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up. And we still need to pursue that.
Throughout his rise to the White House, Trump capitalized on fear and hatred of Muslims and Mexicans, promising to enact draconian measures against them.
Total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Perhaps nowhere is that xenophobia more pronounced than Maricopa County, Arizona, where Trump won more votes than any other county in the country.
It's America. We don't want Sharia law. It's a Christian country.
You don't like it here? Go to Syria. Go to someplace else.
The March for Trump drew Phoenix area locals, heavily armed militiamen, and white nationalists outspoken on preserving their narrow vision of American culture.
I don't want them. As a veteran, I don't want them. Let them go back home where their home is. If they've got a problem, let Saudi Arabia take care of them.
Yeah, I thought that's our understanding. Build the wall. That's cool.
How old are you?
13. She really is that Jewish. She should go back to her country, the girl right there.
Where are the gay pride events in Gaza? I have a gay friend who'd like to go to one.
I'm American.
Yeah, exactly.
And the people coming here need to assimilate.
They do not want to assimilate.
Oh, actually, I haven't noticed, but maybe if you point it out, maybe because they're scared. They don't want to stand up for their white fellow people. It took white people standing up for us to get us through the civil rights movement and give us civil rights. It's going to take black people and colored people standing up for white people.
This, by the way, is, I guess the modern term would be a self-hating black guy wearing his Hillary for prison shirt.
We have white people saying Black Lives Matter, which is funded by George Soros, but they're saying Black Lives Matter. We got people out here supporting us colored people.
They don't assume.
Really?
Where's you see my car and my truck, and I don't have Mexico. What the hell?
I'm American.
Yeah. The Mexican culture, forget it. I'm still proud that I was born in Mexico. But you don't see me waving the Mexican flag. You don't see me out there saying Viva Mexico.
You're not burning an American flag.
No. No.
You're happy to be here.
Yes. And I do not.
It's a privilege.
And I do not speak Spanish in public.
Leading the incitement against Latino immigrants was former sheriff of Pinal County, Paul Babiu.
And you know why a dude doesn't speak Spanish in public? Because he didn't want the people there, the types of people that are there at that rally, to come and beat him over the head with a goddamn pipe. But, you know, that's just me. I know. We've already sent the angry Indian right around the bend. Angry, sending me a note. Jesus fucking Christ. Colored people. Yeah, I know. Maird, angry says.
In 2012, Babiu allegedly threatened to deport his undocumented ex-lover, Jose Orozco, if he revealed the relationship.
More important than illegals coming across this border, more important than the drug cartels that we continue to fight, that Trump is going to put his foot on their neck. But it's also an unsecured border. It stands to reason that people from countries of interest, people who have terrorist intentions would use this unsecure border as a likely avenue of reproach.
You see, our militia's out here. They're out here volunteering their time when they could be working right now. Nobody has respect for our servicemen. They might not be government affiliated, but they're still servicemen. And they still work their butts off.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
They might not tell you who they are, and that's because they're protecting their people. So, and I stand behind them.
Build a great, great wall on our southern border, and I will have Mexico pay for that wall.
Proud as could be. I'm as happy as I've been almost in my lifetime. And so I would do this every day from the rest of my life, to be honest with you.
At the podium, speaker after speaker egged on racist and paranoid fantasies of a communist takeover from within.
Sheriff Joe, since he left, I don't know if you saw it, but they showed the proof about the birth certificate. It's out there. It clearly seems to be false. And I, for one, and I hope you, want the Trump administration to find out the rest. Don't we? Don't we? The Democratic Party is the Socialist Party of the United States because they are anti-Americans. They're not pro-Americans. They're liars and misleaders, and they want to wipe us out. We need to wipe them out. And it starts by putting people in prison that deserve to be there and freeing people that don't. Yeah. Do you like the NRA?
Yeah. USA! 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 USA!
I've never liked McCain too much, and his mask really came off.
This particular asshole is carrying a hashtag deport McCain sign, just in case you were wondering.
There's reason to believe that he was working for the enemy when he was over at the Hanoi Hilton. And
like he's a secret communist?
I think there's reason to believe that, yeah. Once they have control of the media, they can control what people think, and then they can move their agenda forward that way.
We're turned into sheeple with the fake news, huh?
Exactly. It's sad but true, but we're changing that now.
What do you think about Pizzagate?
I think there's a lot there. I haven't looked into it. I mean, I've looked into it a fair amount, but I think there's definitely enough there to warrant an investigation.
The enemies of freedom that realized during the Vietnam War that they could destroy America infiltrated our country, and they filled our colleges, our universities, and our schools.
Hey, son of a gun, who knew that? That kindly English professor who didn't even look a little bit Vietnamese, was actually secretly Viet Cong, huh? I'll be dipped. Howdy do.
Started infiltrating the colleges and universities, and they started turning out who I call enemies of freedom. The liberals, the progressives, the socialists, the communists, and now the Sharia law Muslims. Sharia law Muslims will go into a school and kill all the kids. Sharia law Muslims are already in America, just like cancer. I still feel guilty of the people I killed in Vietnam. It still haunts me. But I'm not proud. Guess what I did? I killed people. Bullshit. So I'd rather say...
I doubt if that guy killed so much as a goddamn mosquito. But anyway.
Defended America. But the Muslims, look at all the people we killed. We just blew up that plane. We blew up that bus.
What a dumbass. Get your ass.
I just want to let them know I can't wait
what
for
other country
genocide
to begin. Right.
I can't wait for the liberal genocide to begin. Look, it's easy to say, they're just crazy. But you know what? Some of them may just be all talk. Others of them, though, well, others of them, lots of others of them, have shit tons of really, really deadly firearms. And just as a general reminder here, the difference between a lawful gun owner and an awful gun owner is A, consonant, and B, defined by the distance traveled before the pin hits the shell. And it's really not much distance at all. I can't wait for the liberal genocide to begin.
Well, that's a way to make America great again, because liberals are destroying the country.
My home, sweet home.
For The Real News, I'm Dan Cohen.
Thanks, Dan. I'm glad you got out of there safely without being hit in the head with a pipe or anything. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, damn! When the hell did this country take a hard right turn into the fucking Twilight Zones? Liberals are liars? These people are knucking futs. Well, they are, and they've been made that way. And it's a transgenerational process that started back, back with the people who were willing to support a coup against Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It traveled forward in time. It transmogrified with the help of the Koch brothers' pappy into the John Birch Society, which howled and screamed that Dwight D. Eisenhower was a commie stooge. And, you know, the great-grandparents and the grandparents passed it along. And this is the natural outgrowth. Oh, and by the way, it turns out Lieutenant General Michael Flynn has filed papers admitting that he was a foreign agent for the Turkish government to the tune of $500,000. You know, when he was standing at the podium at the Republican National Convention, hollering, lock her up, lock her up. He was an agent in service of a foreign power, to wit Turkey, to the tune of a little over $500,000 a year. But shh. Scott and Punky with an email. A question, they write. The lovely audio montage of all the right-wing ranters prompts me to ask, does the proposed Trump care plan include mental health benefits and coverage? Answer? No. Not that any of these mutterers and malcontents would ever avail themselves of it. I was just wondering. Signed, Scott in San Diego and his little tranquil, feathered pal, Punky the Cockatiel. We addressed that specifically last night. At least where the Medicaid portion, the Medicaid expansion portion of the GOP care, GOP care. Remember, this isn't Trump's idea. This is the 25-year-long wet, spoogey dream of the American right-wing think tanks and the candidates that they sponsor. And no, there's no mental health care. There's no addiction care. None of that. So we've done, let's see, Arizona, Oregon. How's about we check in at, Ron from Raleigh's home state, to wit, North Carolina, and in particular, Leesville Road Middle School. Gosh, I wonder why it's called Leesville Road. If you're in Northern Virginia, the Lee Highway just runs all over Northern Virginia. It's got more turns and permutations, probably, than Peachtree does in Atlanta. Anyway, at the Leesville Road Middle School, the young scholars there posted a video. They were enjoying their creativity. They posted a video at their at a music website. Uh-huh. It was posted on Instagram. Let's see if we can get the audio from it, shall we? Oh, it's full of bleeps. Screw that. Well, Well, what it turns out that the precious young scholars were heard to chant KKK, KKK, KKK. Yeah. The school claims it has disciplined the young academics. Leesville Road Middle School is in the Wake Schools District in North Carolina. The video itself has gone viral. And I guess that some of this stems out of a fight in at Wake Forest High School after some high school kid with obvious economic anxiety began screaming that word. Some of the parents are not particularly thrilled with the punishment that was meted out. Tyonda Holt is one of the parents. She said that video represents terrorism. That is inciting hate. Someone could have seen that video and gotten riled up. Because last week, a young black man by the name of Micah Speed, he got a 10-day suspension for getting in a fight after the white kid made death threats against him. And young Mr. Speed said he had been the recipient of racial harassment for months before he finally snapped. But, the young scholars there at the middle school, they just got a stern talking to. That's a lovely evening, isn't it? Neo-Nazis, Klansmen, various and sundry, Trump voters are having a hissy in Georgistan because of the sentencing of a couple of bigots. It was last month when Kayla Norton and Jose Torres were convicted after they terrorized a little kid's birthday party back in 2015. I think we may have even had the audio of that back then. They showed up in a truck at the birthday party and pulled out a shotgun and threatened to kill people, not the least of whom were children at the party itself. They were charged. They have now been convicted. And the judge who heard the case in Douglas County was not particularly sympathetic to their cause and sentenced them each to 20 years in prison. Which I'm finding it quite hard to work up a real proper sad about. Yeah? Well, this has enraged the various Klansmen and neo-Nazis and skinheads and all the people who enable and support and quietly go about the business of making this country nastier than it's been in quite some time, which is saying something. James Oliver, identified as a member of the National Socialist Movement, which the Southern Poverty Law Center identifies as the country's largest neo-Nazi operation is Rat Pissed. He put up a video and then took it down right lickety-split and said, 20 years for fucking freedom of speech, for name-calling, some high school, middle school, kindergarten bullshit. Not one Negro was harmed. However, one of them did get their feelings hurt by the use of the N-word. I'm guessing it's not so much the N-word as it was the shotgun and the clearly stated willingness to murder little children at a birthday party. And in their conniption, now in an attempt to rewrite history, and I'm sure that website that rhymes with light and fart will be right on this to advance this this bullshit rewrite. The Klansmen and neo-Nazis and whatnot claim that they were attacked by 30 Negroes. Mm-hmm. Counted them. And one of the people that are headed to the Hooskow got stuck there in front of a whole unruly mob of screaming Negroes. None of whom were waving shotguns at the white person. If there really was a screaming unruly... Right. Mm-hmm. The circuit judge who sentenced the two assholes, namely Douglas County Circuit Judge William Bo McLean, has received threats. Let's see... Something needs to be done about judges like this. Well, maybe y'all can go night riding there, Cletus. Mm-hmm. Yes. That'd be the very thing, wouldn't it? All right. So, just a little cross section of the country. To remind us that the Trumpansies are out there and they're sure working real hard to make Merca great again. And you know, it's not just jerkwater. Workaday racists. Out in Colorado, a man there was detained, according to a lawsuit he has filed, was detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement for days on end because they said he looked Hispanic. Mm-hmm. Bernardo Medina is 22 years old. He had been hailed into court back in 2015 for a DUI sentencing hearing in Gunnison County, Colorado, where he was aggressively confronted by ICE agents who demanded papers, please. He showed his state ID, and then they carted him off to Alamosa, Colorado, to be questioned. That's where one of them looked at him and said, "You don't look like you were born in Montrose." And then they transported him to another immigration center in Colorado Springs, where, according to the suit papers, not only was he insisting to every person who would listen that he was a U.S. citizen, his family was also on the outside trying to talk with any ICE official that would talk with them. to show his birth certificate. It wound up taking, what, 4 or 5 days. Before he was finally, before they finally realized that, damn, he sure does look like a illegal, but I guess he's murking. Can't make this stuff up. Hey, thanks very kindly to Laborman. Thanks, Gary, for jumping out and in one fell swoop meeting Tom's what do we call it? The Suffering Sycophants Challenge. Thank you, Laborman. Thank you very kindly. So that would mean if we wanted to, you know, we could maybe jump out front a little bit and get started on Monday. That would be lovely. Oh, and by the way, this isn't anything monumental or anything, but I'm proud to announce that we are once again streaming on our non-metered bandwidth. Yay. Just as I was getting the notice saying, you have used up 90% of your allotted bandwidth. Whew, that was close. Because when you go over, it's $15 a gig. So I guess we're just going to kind of have to play it real close to the vest with those remaining, 3.6 gigs for the rest of the month. Ah! Come Sunday, I'm headed down to Welch, West Virginia, McDowell County. You remember the story about how the powers that be in West Virginia decided that it was intolerable that Bernie Sanders would come to West Virginia and actually give a damn about the suffering people in the sacrifice zone in the southern part of the state, and in particular in McDowell County? Well, Bernie said at the time that they tried to screw him over, Joe Manchin, Jim Justice, that cabal, and General Gillum. And he said, we'll hold the meeting in the streets if we have to. Well, turned out they didn't have to. Come Sunday, they will be taping a town hall with Bernie and Chris Hayes from All In on MSNBC down in McDowell County, and I'm headed down for it. Hopefully I'll have something to report come Monday. It should be an interesting meeting because, among other things, the people organizing the town hall are not interested in just hearing from Democrats or just hearing from Trump voters. They're making a concerted effort to hear from everyone, to get some idea of something resembling consensus for what Southern West Virginia needs. I'm sure it'll touch on issues of economics, issues of, a collapsed economy, issues of addiction, education, even access. You can look on the map and find that there is no easy way to Welch, West Virginia. In particular, Highway 52, which is one of the ways of getting there, is one of the most nightmarish roads I've ever been on. And so, I mean, as the crow flies, it's not that far. But it's going to wind up being about a 2-2.5 hour drive for me on Sunday. You go figure. And then the town hall will be played in delay I presume, on Monday evening on Chris's program on MSNBC. Okay. And I'm going to go. I mentioned it a little bit the last couple of nights. And I'll go ahead and mention it again. I feel something less than great. Every day is an exercise in pain these days. So I'm going to try to... I'll try to get through the next couple of hours, but I took 4 ibuprofen right before airtime, and it doesn't seem to be doing me a whole hell of a lot of good. I've been living on ibuprofen because, of course, being a hillbilly, it doesn't matter how much pain you're in. You're not allowed to have actual pain relief because the presumption is that you'll chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor, or you'll go down and sell them back behind the Baptist church, or, I don't know, shoot your granny, or who knows. But I'll try to get through the next couple of hours, but I gotta admit, my fondest wish right now is to get horizontal. Our buddy Gerald knows the lay of the land here, too. He said, easiest way to Welch, West Virginia doesn't exist, not even by helicopter. Parachute, maybe. A lot of history down there. It was on the steps of the McDowell County Courthouse that the Baldwin Thugs, the Baldwin Felts Detective Agency, who worked as enforcers for the coal companies in that area, gunned down Sid Hatfield in an act of retribution for his having defended himself against another Baldwin thug and killed him. Most people think about the Wild West, and they think about places with tumbleweeds and hot, arid, dry places and the OK Corral and stuff. Mm-mm. You want shootouts? You want Wild West action? And you don't even have to talk about the Hatfields and McCoys. You could, and I don't know why no one has so far. You could write a series that would last years on Netflix or Amazon Prime or any number of networks about the mine wars in West Virginia and Kentucky, but in particular in West Virginia. If you've never seen the movie and you'd like to get a taste of that time, the early 20th century in the southern West Virginia coal fields, which were a closed shop. It was closed to unions. It was a fiefdom ruled with an iron fist. Get the, 1986, 1987 film by John Sayles, Matewan, M-A-T-E-W-A-N. Matewan is a little town on the Tug Fork in Mingo County, which was at the time referred to as Bloody Mingo. And I think you'll be quite moved. But while I'm down there, I'm going to make a stop by just to pay my respects to the memory of Sid Hatfield, who stood up for working people when damn near nobody else would in this state. So that's that. You know, that's part of my weekend, and that's I'll probably spend most of tomorrow just trying to gather up strength for the adventure. And I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to afford potential surgery to, yank out hunks of organs. I can't tell you how excited I'm not about that. But by the same token, this kind of pain, and I can take a good bit of pain, this kind of pain is not something you want to even try to learn to live with. And Gerald points out, if you've never seen Mate 1, and if you have any empathy for your fellow man, you're likely to get done watching it, and you will be angry, furious, as well as sad. Because it is, in fact, real. And the whole, you know, the whole time that Mother Jones was here, it's a stunningly underreported bit of history. It all culminates in the armed march on Logan. When Mother Jones begged her boys, the UMWA, not to take up arms, to remain nonviolent to the extent that hillbillies are capable of that. And they said, Mother Jones, you've lost your nerve. And they got their guns and they marched toward Logan. And the United States sent the Air Force out to investigate the possibility of aerially bombing its own citizens, took up arms, shot at its own citizens in the biggest single uprising that has happened in this country since the Civil War. And because they had taken up arms, the UMWA was crushed like a bug on pavement. Just a gentle reminder, they got the guns. We damned well have to, for all we're worth, try to have some brains. A reminder from Scott and Punky, another good entry or introduction to the history of the region. Can be found on Amazon Prime via American Experience PBS. It's called The Mine Wars. And you'll be infuriated, but you will be informed. And you'll know a little more history than, say, a bunch of other people. And you'll have a better appreciation for the long and bloody road that people in this neck of the woods have trod. Might even develop some sympathy. I'm deeply conflicted. I go back and forth between sympathy and absolute frustration. I'm sure you know what I mean. So let's take a break and give Sparky a chance to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Hopefully we will have some vibrant participation this evening. And yes, thanks again to Laborman Gary for meeting Tom's Suffer and Sycophants Challenge. And let's see if we can get out for a change. Just get out in front of things a little bit. $5 at a time, 10, whatever. We'll take a bite out of Monday. Maybe. Maybe. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn, Friday on the Front Porch.
How the good old union has come in here
I played that song for a couple of reasons. One, I could listen to Natalie Merchant sing the atonal diatribes of the people of Norblap 12, whose mouths are in the top of their heads, which are on the bottoms of their feet. And two, the question remains instructive. It doesn't say which of several sides are you on. It doesn't say which side are you on, but it's okay if you wander off into the weeds with some other side if you decide that the good side isn't good enough or pure enough or perfect enough. Which side are you on? A duality. see how it works. Thank you very kindly, Charlene. Thank you, Charlene, for getting us started on Monday. That is much obliged, much appreciated indeed. Charlene got us started with $15. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Well, let us stand not upon ceremony and instead go over to Skype where Sparky waits with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
So, what's this about a rat?
Donnie the Rat?
Donnie the Rat, yes, Donnie the Rat.
Yeah, well...
Is Donnie the Rat pining for the fjords yet? Is he an ex-rat yet?
No. I knew I had something living out here. I just didn't know. I had never seen it. So the other day at night, Judy comes in the room and says, the lamp's out in the kitchen fluorescent. So I had to come out here to the man cave to get my step ladder. So I go over where I keep the ladders. I got a 10-footer and a 6-footer. And I went to move the ladder, and all of a sudden this rat comes hauling ass off this shelf, up the shelving, all the way up to the roof, and he starts running around the trusses in here in the shop. So I wasn't able to catch him or see where he went, but he was fast. So I nicknamed him Donnie the Rat in honor of our illustrious leader.
Hallelujah.
And I come out here every night now looking to see if I can find him again.
Does that mean, since we're only talking about a rat, does that mean that we can say things like say next Friday maybe we can come back on and I can say, hey, Sparky, is Donnie dead yet?
I don't know if you can do that. I got some poison out, so... I don't know if I'll ever see him again.
Maybe he'll have a taste for it.
Well, it's a mole and gopher pellets that I had.
Oh, I think you probably want some Norwegian rat bait. Those Norway rats are little bastards, I hear.
Yeah. Well, it's the first one in almost the history of the man cave that I've ever seen. This building's almost be 50 years old next year. So it was a first.
Well, I thought you had big, beautiful walls that would keep rats out.
Well, there's the doors are sliding doors on the east side and the north side. The north side has two sliders and the east side has one. So the way we keep them, latch them at night, is you pull them even to the where the opening is, and there's these 2 3/8 rods that come out, threaded, come out of the beams and into the door, and you turn and pulls the door in, but there's still a little crack there.
And it's plenty big enough, I'm sure.
If it's to squeeze through. So that's how that works.
Well, keep us abreast of it. The adventures of Donnie the Rat. You don't happen to have a cat named Hillary, do you?
No.
Well, shelter can't be that far away.
When my stepson was down here last, they have a cat that they bring. And I said, well, we ought to put the cat out there in the shop for the night. And his wife goes, oh, hell no. You ain't putting my cat out in that shop.
Cat's going to be cats. Well, we've got the beginnings of a good group this evening. Larry is with us this evening. Hadn't been around for a while. Larry, let me start out by extending you condolences on the part of the entire Horn family community congregation for the loss of your mother. I was saddened to read that a couple of days ago.
I appreciate that, Bob.
You okay?
She was a very good woman.
She raised a good boy.
Well, I would only hope so. I hope she's raised two good boys and a nice gal too, because I've got a brother and a sister, and we're all trying to function as normal is for each one of us. It's difficult, but we're doing the best we can.
And you're okay?
Well, you know, I wasn't okay when I first heard about it. I didn't find out until Saturday, March 4th, and she died on Tuesday night, and they just felt that my brother wanted to come up to visit me and tell me in person what happened. But it was very sudden, Bob. It was pancreatic cancer, and it happened so rapidly, it's like you snap your finger. And she had dementia, but this pancreatic cancer came in and metastasized to her liver, and that was it. So, unfortunately, she's not here with us, but fortunately, she's not in a great deal of pain anymore, or in a great deal of suffering, which she would have been in. She was a nurse like Agnes. She was a nurse and a teacher. That's what she did in her. Those were her two main occupations while she was alive. You know, doing some form of nursing, medical assisting, or doing some form of teaching either at the elementary school level or at the junior high level. So.
A well spent life.
Yeah, she's missed. She was 84 years old. So. I hope she's, you know, I talked to her, and the regret that I have is that I didn't go down and see her enough. I didn't have the opportunity. I had opportunities, but, you know, I didn't go down and see her enough. But I talked to her on the phone on her birthday, and I talked to her on the phone on the holidays, and she understood the physical logistics of me going back and forth to L.A. on the plane and having to depend upon other people when I was down in L.A. for just about everything. So, I miss her. I miss her a lot. It was difficult on Sunday after my brother drove off. I fell apart. But, my brother and sister were trying to get me to keep it together and stay, you know, reasonably stable. But I don't think that anybody can.
Easier
really do
said
that.
Than done, without a doubt.
Yes, but thank you very much for your condolences. I appreciate your condolences, and I miss all my chat friends because I haven't been on any real, you know, I haven't been on any chats with any of the, you know, with the whole normal gang for a long time. But hopefully, you know, something will work out. Thank you very much for your condolences, Bob. I appreciate you very much for doing that and for giving me the condolences. And we'll have a memorial at some point in a few weeks where I'll go down there, and so that's what we're planning to do, So, okay, Bob. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, it's our honor, Larry. Okay, let's check in. Let's check in with Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
You.
All of us.
All of us. We're all up. Been a crazy week, hasn't it, Bob?
Crazy week and a half. Crazier than I care to. I'm absolutely enamored of boredom now.
too much news to comprehend for 1 week, for anybody, you know. And the thing that stands out to me, especially with looking back at, you know, illnesses, you dealing with your illness and all that, is this Trump care. And I wanted to get your take on that, Bob. Do you think it's dead in the water, or do you think they're going to push this
through? Oh, hell no, it's not dead in the water.
Well, that's what they're saying, because you got so many Republicans that are.
Well, that's because the for-profit media have to move electrons. Right. They have to create some drama around it, for God's sakes.
But anybody that's can hear what I'm saying, if you're above 40 and you don't think that you're going to get sick, you're deluding yourself, because so many things can happen once you get past 40. And it's expensive, you know. I was in the chat room last night, and then I was telling folks about my osteomyelitis incident. And I thought that I was taking antibiotics at the tune of $16,000 a night. And Snurk said, my God, what'd you do? gargle anthrax? And then I was checked with Karen. She's like, no, it was $16,000 a week. But even so, I mean, without insurance, that would have ruined us.
Oh yeah,
that went on. For
and you know what? One of the things that I found interesting, I saw a clip earlier today of Paul Ryan from 2009, in which, in discussing the Affordable Care Act, he whined, and I do mean whined. Well, y'all won the election. I guess y'all get to do this, but you've got a gun to our head. And I thought, you evil bastard.
Oh, my God.
Because he really does have a gun to the head of several millions of Americans. And, you know, right now I feel like I'm one of those people.
Why are these fuckers so evil? Why do they want to see us drown?
Because they worship money, Steve. That's their God. They're not Christians. They're servants of mammon. And their altar is constantly, perpetually soaked in innocent blood. They thrive on it. They feast on it. They make vampires look like phlebotomists.
They must not have any soul, because a normal person doesn't think that way. A normal person with a loving heart does not think that way. Just bury innocent people for profit.
I mean, I saw... I saw the Now, and I'm sure you know all about him, the Now Health and Human Services Secretary, Tom Price, on TV today. And, you know, they put simple questions to him. Will anybody be anybody? Is there one person in America who will be worse off as a result of the bill that they're trying to ramrod through Congress? Well, we like to think that everybody's going to have access. And I'm going to get to the point where I'm going to start throwing things every time I hear the word access.
I hear you, Bob. And yeah, Tom Price, he was from the Marietta district. And
it's that whole Gwinnett district it's Newt Gingrich's old seat.
Exactly. But, you know, we got to raise hell about this. We cannot let this get through. If so, so many good people are going to die. I can't put it any more bluntly than that. You're either going to die or you're going to end up on the street without a pot to piss in. You won't even be able to afford the pot. Because, as you know, I mean, just a freestanding IV pole that I had to bring home was $800, Bob.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, hell, I'll just make Ferg stand there and hold the damn bag.
That's what I said. If I'd have known, I'd have just hung it from a lamp, you know. But my insurance paid for it, but I may not always have insurance, you know. It's just a day-to-day thing.
Well, look, you just identified one of the problems. Why is an IV stand $800? It's not made out of aircraft-grade titanium.
No, it was stainless steel with a tightening nut in the middle. That was it, with the three-legged prong. That's it.
Well, yeah, out there in the man cave, I'm sure that Sparky could probably whip one up on the lathe in no time flat.
Oh, absolutely.
I've got something here already that will do that.
See? The lathe
don't work.
But if you think $16,000 a week is outrageous, look up the price for Cubicans. Cubican, that's what they had me on. Plus another Cipro type drug that I had to drip. I had to get a PICC line. That surgery was probably $10,000. Are you familiar with a PICC line?
Oh,
Bob?
Yeah, entirely, yes.
Okay. Well, I don't want to get too far in the weeds to make the show about me. My point is, we need to open our eyes. We need to raise hell. We cannot let this get through. We cannot, or it's going to hurt a lot
of
people. But
see, one of the problems, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Steve, but anytime that you have a controversy, a political controversy, if you do not have an equally compelling counter argument, you're screwed. So what we've got now is, well, Obamacare is failing fast. It probably won't be with us much longer.
It's collapsing on itself. How many times you heard that?
Exactly.
Bullshit?
And so we got to do something. And of course, the something we got to do is kill us some pores.
Well, here's another solution.
But wait, I think I'm getting where you're going.
Okay.
In very few instances, to the point of calling them rare, and since I now have DirecTV now, I monitor some news channels and I try to pay attention when they're talking about these things. It's like you would think that mentioning universal single payer health care, or as it is more simply described, Medicare for all, you would think that mentioning that was on a par with denying Christ for a hardcore Christian. Because it's always a question between, well, do we just leave the Affordable Care Act alone? Or do we let these Republicans go ahead and kill off a few million Americans? There's never a discussion about anything even resembling the viability of, say, a Canadian system. Because the media has been so thoroughly saturated by tales of poor Canadians sitting in the hallways waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for desperately needed heart bypass surgery because they ration health care in Canada and Canadians die. Because it's communism.
Even if they didn't want to go the route of single payer, any government worker, anybody that's been in the military, anybody that's worked for the post office, they have a pool that they're in. They can pick from 12 different carriers at least. Why not put everybody in that pool? The more people in the pool, the less expensive it's going to be. It's common sense. But no, they're not going to go that route. Now answer me that. Why not? Why not at least give that a try before you start throwing Trump care in our
GOP
face?
Care. Gonna... GOP care.
Yep.
GOP care. I mean, I give the devil his due, okay? This ain't Trump's idea. He doesn't have ideas.
No, he's not.
Call it Ryan care.
Yep.
Call it GOP care. Because, again, this is the spoogey wet dream that they've had for 25 years.
Next, they're coming after your Medicare, and then they're coming after your Social Security. Don't kid yourself if you think they're not. This is the first step.
Right, and what they'll do...
Yeah, absolutely.
And what they'll do is they will try to turn the population that's already receiving both of those things against the rest of America. Kind of the way I think it was Frank the other night toward the end of the program said... Well, you know, they busted the private sector unions or public sector unions in Iowa, except for the firefighters and the cops. Those guys, those people still get, you know, their union rights. And that's so that they can have them on the Republican side. Well, it's the same approach to Medicare and Social Security. Now, if you're already getting it, don't you worry. We're not going to touch a penny of it. It's not. You're absolutely safe. We're just going to fuck everybody younger than you,
right.
And they're counting on, and they're counting on the recipients to go, yeah, fuck them young whippersnappers, fuck them good.
Yeah, can you imagine our population of people with disabilities who are on Medicare and Medi-Cal, and we've done it to welfare, to the population, welfare population in the past 20 years ago, where we pitted ourselves, where we were pitted against the population of welfare people in the state of California in order to get a cost of living adjustment for our SSI, and we're fighting that now. And I don't want to be turned against my fellow people who need health care. I mean, I want to work with them to get everybody health care.
Right, but we had damned well better start yesterday working on messaging along those lines, because I'm not hearing it. I mean, I read the newspapers, I watch the TV. There's not much to hear on the radio. I check out clips online, what have you, and, you know, bupkis. And frankly, the for-profit media would probably like to have recipients pitted against non-recipients, because it would make for good copy, and it would make for good conflict, and make for good drama, which, of course, sells ads. Right?
Always about the fucking dollars. Always. Well, Bob, I'm going to toss it back to you. It was nice talking to you. I'll be here.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, we're just going to get it going all around. Let's check in with Billable Rick. Are you there, Billable Rick?
He's working from home today. I already talked to him. He might be on a phone call or something.
Okay, well, we'll try Snork then. Hey, Snork.
Hello.
There he is.
Is the microphone fine here? I haven't tried it before.
Yeah, you're working.
Sorry, great big meatball in my mouth.
Ah, well, you want me to go somewhere else? Try somebody else until you're meatball free?
I'll take a drink.
Checking with Tracy to see what she's doing in Vegas.
Tracy, you're in Vegas?
And I guess she's not listening. I can't talk, she says.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Hit Max. Tracy just hit Max Bet and press the button, okay?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Oh, okay. There's Billable
Hey.
Rick.
Hey, Larry, my condolences for your mother.
Thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very sorry to hear about that. I know that she was not doing well mentally. I didn't know about the pancreatic issue until you alerted us to that.
That happened very quickly. I know I interrupted. That happened so quickly, it's like in a blink of an eye.
Well,
that's how fast it happened.
I mean, for those of us who are religious or maybe aren't quite sure, that I guess you could call that a blessing in disguise, possibly, Larry, because, you know, if you have dementia and you just kind of linger and linger and linger and your mind just goes, but physically you're okay, that's real hard for the survivors, you know, to see somebody, you know, get that, empty-headed, let's just say, for lack of a better term.
To have their life stolen from them.
Yeah, their memories, their memories, their mind. Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know. Anyway, I'm so sorry to hear about that, Larry. We all have to go. Is your dad doing okay at least?
Well, Dad's 91. He's doing okay.
Okay.
I'm grateful that he's around. And, I just become more and more aware as I get older about,
Yeah, don't we all, man?
It happens to all of us.
Yeah, we don't,
and,
you know.
But,
yeah.
But, we're going to have a memorial down in L.A. and all probably in well, probably. What did I say that for? You know, I'll go down there.
Okay.
But I appreciate your condolences. I really do. And I miss, you know, I'm trying to keep, Bob talks about sparkle ponies. Well, I'm trying to stay idealistic enough to have my sparkle pony, but I'm also trying to stay grounded.
Okay.
And be realistic about how I can get that sparkle pony together, because the sparkle pony, everybody thinks is a sparkle pony, isn't going to be a sparkle pony, because right. Whatever you think about in you know, I would like to follow, you know, Richard Wolff, and I would like to see, you know, a lot of things changing in the society, but I don't see a groundswell of millions of people out there fighting yet. And if I were the one leading the charge, you know, I'd be the first one that they, you know, if the police came after me, I'm all about exhorting people to go out and protest. But right. If they came out after me, I'd be the first one running.
I hear you. I hear you, Larry. Well, anyway, I guess think of it this way. One person's sparkle pony is another person's turd blossom.
Okay.
Well. Bob.
Rick.
Got a question for you here.
Yeah?
Got to call you back, Brian. How's the fundraising going tonight?
Well, we met our goal thanks to a challenge from Tom. The Suffer and Sycophant challenge was met by Labor Man. Okay. Charlene put us over the top for fundraising, so we're kind of working on Monday a little bit.
Well, could you guys use a challenge? I could call it the Don't Fear the Reaper challenge.
Oh, what did Blue Oyster Cult play? Have you been to another concert?
I am seeing them tonight with my son.
Aha!
I'm actually working from home.
Okay, then the Don't Fear the Reaper challenge is on the table to the amount of?
Let's say I'll make it 25, and if it's met, I'll throw a total of 50 in.
Okay, so we need a $25 response, or five at five, however we do it, to Rick, and then so he'll double your money. And then he'll triple it, as it turns out, if we do get the 25. And that'd be great, because that would put us almost halfway to Monday.
Okay, great.
Are you stoked for the concert?
I am. They still sound pretty good in concert. I've listened to some of their shows, like, in the last couple of years on YouTube. And I also read some concert reviews, because I want to make sure that this is not like some band that's, like, you know, outworn its welcome, let's say, by continuing to tour when they can no longer really play well, you know. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. They're playing at a 2,000-seat theater in Beverly Hills that I also saw, I think, Styx at. It's called the Saban Theater.
Rick, are the original members going to be there, Alan Lanier and Buck Dharma and Rossiter and whatever?
I think Alan Lanier has passed away, Larry, like a year or two ago, maybe.
The question is, will there be cowbell?
Oh, there got to be cowbells with Don't Fear the Reaper Man? Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right. I think that was the genesis of that Saturday Night Live skit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
More cowbells.
Wait a minute.
Hey, there you go.
Yep. Well, do you have a list? I mean, let's see. Don't Fear the Reaper.
Godzilla.
Godzilla, absolutely. There goes Tokyo. Go, go, Godzilla. Yeah.
Yeah. What else do they have? They kind of had a semi comeback, I think, in the 80s. They might have had a couple of songs that were hits in the 80s.
Burning for You.
Burning for You. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Burn Out the Day, Burn Out the Night. I can't tell what's wrong or what's right. I'm living for giving the devil his due. I'm burning for you.
Awesome.
That's a great song.
So
I can't remember relatives' birthdays, but I can remember that.
Well, you're a former DJ. What do you expect, Bob?
I guess it's just rote repetition learning.
Yeah. Well, I you know, since I'm home today, what I, you know, at times I forget to bring my webcam home, and I kind of go back and forth between the office and home with the webcam. And Sparky said, just buy a fucking webcam. And so I did that this morning. And so I have a webcam, a permanent dedicated webcam here at home on those occasions when I work from home and want to call into the horn here via Skype.
Well, and a little bird has told me that you've been working the progressive radio shows for the last week or so. So I don't know. You've had a little time.
I've been getting on to Norman. I've talked to Randy a couple of times in the last week or so, and you know, various topics, whether it's the immigration, the Muslim ban 2.0, or you know, other things that other misdeeds of Trump. The latest one now that I see on CNN, I have the picture on, but not the sound, obviously, is apparently he has just fired 46 U.S. attorneys. Sound familiar?
Look, there are purges going on all over the United States government. The State Department has been hollowed out.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a little frightening.
Yeah.
Oh, who am I kidding? That's a lot frightening.
I mean, I guess my concern, Bob, is, I mean, who's going to be around to turn the lights out, you know, at the end of the day?
Well, without a doubt. Oh, hey, good news. Good news. Alma jumped in and answered your challenge.
Okay, very good.
So
I will send $50 via PayPal here momentarily.
That's awesome. Thank you, Rick. Thank you very, very kindly. Yeah. So how long before you head to the concert?
I think the show is at 9:00, so that's about an hour drive from home. I was going to go to the office, but thought, well, you know, if I'm going to bring my son, I don't want him to have to take an Uber all the way from Pasadena to Beverly Hills, which would be probably almost as expensive as the concert ticket, probably $30-$35 just to get an Uber from there, you know. So I decided I'd stay home and I'll drive him. We'll drive together. Actually, he'll probably drive me because he's practicing his driving skills here. So,
wish him a hello from me, Rick. Remember last time?
Oh, absolutely, Larry. Larry, you betcha. And I'll tell him about your mom, and I'm sure you know he will have his condolences to you as well.
I appreciate that. You know,
and I was going to mention, Larry, if you you know, you may not have time because it'll probably be a quick trip for you down to L.A. But you should look me and or Tracy up. If you have time, obviously.
Okay, if I have time, and if you know.
I mean, I kind of know how
it's all a matter of logistics, isn't it?
Yeah.
And by the way, thank you to Michael and Madison. Michael and Madison just kicked in $25. He says, "But I demand more cowbell."
All right.
So.
Bob.
Yeah, Sparky.
Tracy wants to make a $25 Viva Las Vegas challenge.
Oh, cool. Wonderful. So the Viva Las Vegas challenge is now on the table. Thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry. Best I can do on short notice for an Elvis. Thank you, Tracy.
And that's my cowbell.
Whoa.
Your cowbell is more melodic than my cowbell.
Wow.
Well, it's an authentic Swiss cowbell.
Right. For Swiss cows. Clara,
it sounds like a high church cowbell.
Well, I don't care what it sounds like, Scott. It's from Switzerland. My cousin was a foreign exchange student over there and got it from my mom.
Okay,
is that no imitations other than official Swiss cowbells, right?
You've got to have a really clear cowbell in Switzerland, so it can echo all around the Alps and through the little valleys and you know, get over top of all the people singing Edelweiss and stuff. It gets kind of noisy there sometimes. Clarity has joined us. Hey, Clarity, how are you?
Hi. I made it through the week, but I think I cried a couple of buckets of tears.
More than 96? Sorry. Question mark. There are not that many opportunities for a question mark in the Mysterians reference, so, you know.
No, and thank you for that Farfisa. That's a Farfisa organ song there. That goes way back. No, I just have been cycling with my bipolar, and I as I maybe have mentioned in emails that I feel like I'm getting an ulcer since the election. I've just been worried about everything.
Please don't feel alone in that regard. There's a whole bunch of America that feels exactly like that. And I gotta, you know, I gotta worry too about the mental health of the people who think, no, everything's fine. We're getting greater by the minute. Because,
well,
they're headed for the floor is going to come out from under them, don't you think?
I would think so too. Mr. Greg Walden, who's my representative in the largest district area wise in the U.S. Congress, I think the second district in Oregon, which part of his district is where the Bundy occupation occurred. And, you know, I should have known back then that when he was had a kind of a sympathetic ear towards the Bundys, that, of course, you know, there wasn't going to be any justice served as far as that goes. And they basically got a slap on the wrist. They're supposed to go back to court, but that's for stuff that happened in Nevada. I think they're pretty much done with all the stuff that happened in Oregon. Hung jury, you know.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sorry. Do you have any doubt, Clarity, that if that had been a bunch of Native Americans, they'd be under a prison by now?
They'd be right in there with Leonard Peltier.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah. But the other thing I wanted to say was that Walden has not turned one way either way. He is in such a position of power, and nobody can lay a hand on him unless he veers the least bit towards the center, that he might get a primary challenge. But he doesn't need to. You know, it's about a 70-30 gerrymander for him. And he got a really good turnout, you know, for this election. We voted at a higher percentage than Kentucky for a Trump in my congressional district.
Ouch.
Yeah, and that's in Oregon, you know, and the other four districts are, I guess, gerrymandered the other way. We've got one quote-unquote swing, but it hasn't went Republican ever. But, you know, it's the one that's quote-unquote in play. So we've got a Dino in that district, I think he is. But, you know, it's amazing. People think of Oregon as being this, you know, Eugene, Portland, you know, metro sexual Portlandia world. And the vast part of it is BLM, National Forest Service, a wasteland, you know, as far as any opportunities, besides the people that already have their barren, you know, wheat ranches and cattle ranches, and the gentry who think Greg Walden is just fine and they'd love to pay less taxes and not be paid for the quote unquote I-5 mafia. You know, the Salem.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, in many ways, it's two states.
Yeah, well, and it's kind of that way in Washington, once you get on this side of the Cascades. And in California, really, you know, when you get over in the Valley, Fresno area, it's very conservative as well.
And here where I live.
Right. I was talking just the other evening about Devin Nunez from California's 22nd district. You know, I keep seeing, and you know, I'm not trying to fan the flames of controversy here in internecine warfare, but I keep seeing posts from people saying, as long as the Democratic establishment keeps putting forward candidates who blah 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 blah, and I'm sorry, but I step back from that a little bit. I recognize the amount of money that is required in order to win a political race, and I sincerely hope for better progressive candidates, but they got to have money first. And so if you want to knock off a Devin Nunez in California's 22nd, you've got to have a viable candidate, and the viable candidate got to have bucks. And the same thing applies to Greg Walden there. I just looked him up and a little bio. My God, the man owned radio stations. What do you want to bet it was Rush Limbaugh, that life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job, Laura Ingraham, sure.
Well, and I get his newsletter, and you know, the things that he's proud of, you know, every newsletter, you know, we're fighting Obamacare, and that he's fighting for small business, which, quote unquote, his feather in his cap was helping this private airline, which is a little commuter that works out of Roseburg and does, you know, short flights into Northern California and stuff like that, that were being unfairly discriminated against by the FAA because they didn't have some kind of tower, and they were getting socked for insurance because, you know, the airport wasn't as safe as it could be because the FAA is not, you know, bringing our airports up to, you know, another infrastructure story. But, you know, Walden's spin was, oh, the overreaching federal government is, you know, crushing these small businesses, and airlines are all subsidized, you know. I don't get how he can say that's a small business.
Yeah, given the price of an airplane, I mean, really. And yeah. And along those same lines, the Republicans worship at the altar, the shrine of small business. Have they ever asked a small business person, wouldn't it be great if you didn't even ever have to worry about health care again because all of your employees were covered through Medicare for All or Universal Single Payer? Has a Republican ever asked that question?
That's why the guy that I play music with, who has his own business, works himself to death because he can't afford to hire another employee. He just can't afford it because he has to self-insure himself, and he has a quote-unquote pre-existing condition. But yet, you know, he listens to, as he drives around from contract to contract, he listens to AM talk shows all day. So, and that's what everybody hears. You know, that's kind of the – everything is Fox Network. You know, you go to the doctor's office. It's in the waiting room. You go to the grocery store. The televisions are turned to those stations. And all the must-carry stuff around here has Fox, you know. So it doesn't matter. They get their message out no matter where you live, where we've got to go in our special niches and try to reach – people, and we have to have bake sales, and you have to constantly, you know, work to try to keep from being underneath a, you know, a corporate sponsor that tells you how to speak and how to behave.
Right. And see, the larger problem arises, and I've been talking about this for years, in the fact that, it, you know, you're sitting, your buddy's sitting in the car and he's listening to his right-wing AM radio. If he hits the scan button, he's never going to hear anything else.
No.
And
he might hear some Latino music, which really upsets him, you know. There are some, but they're usually religious stations that also play, Norte music to entice the evangelical money, you know, towards their sponsors.
Sure. And so you see, and it makes you wonder. I mean, I talk about trying to turn a district in South Carolina or Alabama. Is that district you're in, the Oregon second, is that thing ever going to turn? Or what would it get to get that 70% of people to turn on a Greg Walden?
Well, I think just like Trump said, he'd have to pull out his AK and pretty much mow down half the legislature, and then maybe go, well, you know, he was just demonstrating his Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, that's probably Sharia law Muslims that he thought he was a mowing down.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, wrong accent for up there, but you get the idea.
And that's the other thing, you know, I play music, and, you know, it's hard to get people to go out. But if you go to an NRA meeting, it's standing room only.
And people sing in Lee, Greenwood, right?
Well, they don't have time in their meetings to have live music because they have so much, you know, such agenda and all these raffles and fundraising to make sure that, you know, they have enough money to fight for your rights to carry and bear arms. It's like they preach that they're running out of money because all these liberals, you know, which never come, but they got that boogeyman of, you know, he's going to come and take your gun.
And somehow or another, bless his heart, Barack Obama just never got around to it. Well, Clarity, I'm awful glad that you joined in this evening. And,
Me too. And I'm glad that, you know, the tears are behind me for at least a few more days, I'm hoping, and that we can find something to hope for. Next week, you know, the pink Ides of Trump, get your postcard, mail it to him, give him a few suggestions. Let's all join in, send him about 1 million postcards.
Now, that at least keep them busy in the White House mailroom. It sounds good to me.
Bury them in pink.
Absolutely. And, well, stick around. Don't go anywhere. You never know where the conversation's going to go. Let's check in with Charlie down in Tennistan. Hey, Charlie.
How's it going, Bob?
Setting them up, knocking them down.
Well, I've got, I'm going to have to turn off my GPS here. It's kind of getting over the... Well, it's silenced now. But anyway, I wanted to make a comment about the health care that we have in this country today. I guess it was about a year ago, I went to go see an orthopedic doctor, and I was born with cerebral palsy. So the ligaments in the left side of my body, and especially in my leg, are short. And as I get older, I'm 62 years old now. As I'm getting older, I'm starting to walk on my heel. I mean, on the ball of my foot, I'm sorry. And so the doctor said, well, we have a surgery that will correct that now. We make tiny incisions in the muscle. And he said, you'll have to take it easy for a week or two. But he said, this will allow your muscle to stretch out and compensate for the short ligaments in your leg. Well, the doctor put me on physical therapy, and he said, well, I think that we'll try physical therapy. He said, I doubt if that will help. So I was on physical therapy, and after about, I don't know, two or three months, that was all he was going to do. That was all he was going to try. And he also was my deductible on my insurance. I had met my deductible, but he was still charging me my deductible and getting money from the insurance company at the same time. And a lot of this that people are facing right now is just greed from the doctors.
Well, that's a point well taken, because I had a note from James a few minutes ago. And he said, take the power of the subject line, AMA stranglehold. Take the power the AMA holds over the supply of doctors. They're screwing us, not healing us. Supply and demand is very profitable. And that's a conversation well worth having. The American Medical Association really does limit the amount of doctors inside American medical schools and keeps it artificially low.
And a lot of it is just plain old licensing. I mean, you know, you have to go to a doctor. I mean, that's it. If you could go walk into a drugstore and say, well, I need, 200 units of insulin. And if you're diabetic, and they say, sure, here's your insulin. But you can't do that. You've got to go to a doctor. The doctor's got to screw you. And then they'll probably want you to have a bunch of tests that you really don't need, so LabCorp or whoever can make money. And, you know, it's just called spreading the liability around. I don't know. I look at the medical profession in this country, and it's set up to be a money-making thing.
Hi, Charles. How are you? Uh-huh. By the way, Bob, why do you say not a doc or not a doc in a box, or I don't understand.
That goes back to the early days of the HMOs, Larry. Quack in a shack, doc in a box. Just you know, these little standalone offices, Emergicare. Now that's where doc in a box and quack in a shack come from. The not a doctor is the in my particular case, the nurse practitioner who damn near poisoned me with a bad combination of medications a couple of years ago. And they, and in my particular case, you know, there's another not a doctor in the building who offered to lay hands upon and pray over Ferg's busted knee so as to facilitate his healing. That's a not a doc.
Now I understand.
In my wife's case, she had four specialists, doctors, miss her brain cancer, and the physician's assistant caught it.
Yeah, sometimes it works in the opposite direction.
There are some really good physician's assistants out there, and I would like to see us revise our medical system where we use train a lot more. And I mean train, well-trained physician's assistants. Get a lot more of them out there. As one thing I've noticed with a good physician's assistant, they're not as cocky as a doctor, and they will look into what's really on. They will go down a checklist. They won't try to do it by head, by memory. And then they will go talk to the doctor. And I think that conversation between two medical professionals is important when you are going to talk about cutting somebody's body or things like that. And I like that system. And I would like to see physician's assistants paired with nurse practitioners. And instead of looking at nurse practitioner instead of a physician's assistant or a physician, I would like to see a coordination between them so the bad ones get weeded out and the good ones get utilized properly. And we don't have that because we basically worship the doctor, and a regular nurse a lot of times will catch something. And nurses are not treated well, not recognized for what their capabilities are. So if we recognize what a nurse is and we properly use our nurses,
yeah,
I can see the system working well sometimes. I do see many that abuse it. I personally have been to an ophthalmologist, not an optometrist, and told them that I'm allergic to sulfa, and she proceeded to prescribe me sulfa drugs, and was pretty serious. I had to go
did
to
you
an,
think,
another
yeah, did
specialist.
You think I was joking?
Yeah. Right. I really think I agree that the AMA is restricting us from having good service. I personally think that medical education should be free. We have a lot of people that are talented.
Look at the number of really, really good physicians that Cuba has sent out to the world over the last 50 years.
On the other hand, we get a lot of really, really bad physicians. And a physician, most of the time in India, is somebody that flunked out of being an engineer. That's the saying.
Well, that's kind of what gave me the creeps about my CT scan, is that they sent it out to Bangalore or
right.
New
and,
Delhi
and
or
not,
you know, where the hell ever.
I do not appreciate the restriction on Americans into college, but bringing anybody in offshore that has a degree from a country where your family name or your caste means more to your grade than your actual abilities.
Well, there is that. I mean, I remember a very long time ago when it's not a story worth telling.
That's not to say we don't get some very, very good doctors. But I've had one that I noticed did not wash his hands or wear gloves when he tried to give me a blood test.
Ouch.
After handling money, he was a doctor that worked in his... It was the only doctor in the area that was on my plan. So I went to him and said I needed a blood test, and he could do it in lab there, that he had his own lab. And just completely shocked.
Well, we had a cardiac, I forget what kind of lab it was over in Beckley. Agnes probably remembers. But they were so unsanitary, and it was an independent operation, not associated with a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people went there, and I think it was some sort of cardiology practice. And they were so unsanitary that they wound up giving a bunch of people HIV.
Yeah, it's a major concern for me. And India isn't the only country that sends us doctors that probably wouldn't have made it through a bachelor degree here and made it through doctor in remarkable time. They show their grades as being this remarkable student, and they do not demonstrate the knowledge of their field. And I find that disconcerting.
I've had good ones and bad ones. I'll never forget. And this guy was, you know, murking as murking could be. My first prostate exam, digital, and I don't mean like, you know, scientific digital. I mean with a digit, that one. My first prostate exam was performed by an American doctor who was later busted for trying to tongue kiss a catatonic octogenarian guy in a nursing home.
I did have one experience with a foreign doctor that was rather unique. When I was in college, I took scuba diving, and I had to have a physical. And all the physicals, if you signed up for $270 for a semester, you had all the health care you wanted while you're at the school. So I signed up, and I wanted to use that free service to get my exam. And I needed to have an exam by September 15th or something in order to get into the class. And they said that everything is reserved for the athletes until October 1st. So I told them I'd sue them for discrimination for my not being athletic. And they said, we'll have you a doctor right away. And they said, is it okay if we give you a gynecologist? And I said, if she can sign my paperwork, that's fine. So I went in, took my clothes off, and a doctor came in, listened to me breathe, and said, okay, we'll sign it. But she went to school for 2 years in the United States to switch over from being a veterinary in, I think it was Czechoslovakia back then. And when she came to the United States, she became a gynecologist for humans. And her training was that good.
Horses, hoo-hoos, I mean, you know.
Right, but her
in my case, the good, and he was a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian doctor too. In my particular case, they knew that the story was true, because the old guy got conscious enough to bite off a piece of his tongue. The doctor. Now, I read about this in the newspaper, and you know, as I demonstrated earlier this evening, I've got a lot of songs stuck in my head, Snork. And I'm sitting there reading it, and I'm remembering that first prostate exam, and, when you're an old DJ, this shit just, you know, happens to you, and the next thing I know, this is running through my head. Thank you. it turned out the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelical doctor was, trying to paw little boys and all of that stuff. And it's just, yeah. But around here, it's strictly luck of the draw. It's not like there's a lot of economic choice. That's why, when these Republicans talk about how, the gun to the head health care act is going to be so much better because there's going to be so much choice, bullshit. Nobody's going to come a running to the economic wasteland that is West Virginia to be a doctor, and God knows insurance companies aren't. So, it's kind of hard to take that kind of crap seriously. Oh, and I gotta send out thanks to little Cletus. Cletus is such a good puppy. Cletus jumped in to answer $15 of the $25 Viva Las Vegas challenge, courtesy of Tracy, who is in fact in Vegas at the moment. I'm promised that when Cletus gets her Elvis costume, photographs will be provided. So there's that. We've pretty much. We haven't talked to Scott yet and Punky. Hey, Scott. Hey, Punky.
Hello, Uncle Bob. How you doing?
Oh, Uncle Bob's going to get through it. You guys always make me feel better. I felt I was hurting bad when the program started, and I've perked up a little bit.
Well, we've probably been all sending you positive healing energy of one sort or another.
I could use it. By the what? By the Giga Hope.
Well, you keep hurting, we'll keep sending. How's that?
Okay. Well, no, that's not okay. But yeah, I get the idea.
Well,
hey.
Okay. No.
Okay. Where was that ding? Who dinged? Somebody dinged. That was a microwave ding. That was not a. Okay. Never mind.
From here.
Huh. I heard.
Oh, I know what it was. I have bells on the doorknob. And I kind of opened it up. I thought I heard the UPS truck, but I don't see it. So, but anyway, two things. First thing is, according to the most recent numbers that I can find, which I think were 2015, the number of people receiving Social Security benefits, mostly seniors and disabled folks, is something like 65 million people. And with all these changes afoot with Medicare and probably Social Security later on down the line, I'm wondering if anyone has seen a breakdown in numbers having to do with the number of Social Security type recipients who voted for the demented circus peanut who currently stays at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I don't know if anybody knows. They can look it up and let me know. The other thing was something I saw on MSNBC the other night, and I think it had to do with supposed Obama wiretapping of Trump and how that word came forth. And whoever it was on MSNBC pointed out that the Twitter feed for RT, Russian television, or Russia Today, or whatever the hell it is, basically the TV propaganda wing of the former Soviet Union, apparently they broke it on their Twitter feed a half hour before WikiLeaks broke it on their Twitter feed, the folks who actually did the leak. And they were wondering what that was all about. Had you heard that?
Yeah, and people were wondering, really?
Well, no, maybe they weren't wondering, but they were pointing out how interesting it was. I've heard, those taglines of news stations, all the news that is news, and this is one that actually existed. I forget the station. If it's news to you, it's news to us, okay? But this would be a case of the news before it actually hits as news. You know, with a 30-minute head start on the news flash. And the word is WikiLeaks apparently is very cozy with Putin. And it's interesting how Trump just loved the hell out of WikiLeaks back during the campaign. But now he doesn't know what to say. Or maybe he does know what to say and just hasn't said it yet.
Well, you know, other stuff has been coming out, too. You know, we had the Michael Flynn revelations, in which case he was an agent for Turkey to the tune of $500,000, even as he was being a surrogate for, you know, the Trump campaign, even as he was standing there screaming, lock her up. And then are you familiar with the meltdown that Roger Stone had last week?
No, I probably heard about it, but it just slipped my fevered brain. What was it?
He lost his tiny mind over a woman on Twitter simply challenged the idea that Trump had any knowledge whatsoever of being wiretapped, okay?
Yeah.
And tweeted to Roger Stone, who is a rat fucker of extraordinary proportions. I mean, he goes way back in terms of just nasty, nasty business. And so he, I'm trying to find the exact story here real quick. So he took to Twitter just talking a bunch of unmitigated shit. And it was so bad that it eventually got him Twitter banned for a little bit.
Oh, that's, you gotta really go all.
You got to get up early in the morning to be so nasty that Twitter, they punished him. They took him off for like all of 12 hours or something. I mean, yeah. Harsh.
So it was more of a timeout than it was a ban.
But this, yeah, well, because he was behaving like a goddamn toddler. He went ballistic and misogynist ballistic. And then one of his other sock puppet accounts claimed censorship brigade at Twitter shuts down at Roger J. Stone Jr.'s account in blatant move to stymie free speech. Shameful. Well, you know, no, dumbass. The, Twitter is not the United States government, and no government agency has moved to stop you. It's the, just it's a, you know, it's a nastiness thing, because the nastiness in particular, and of course he went and he deleted them. A woman whose handle is RVA Wonk said, "Have you ever heard of libel and slander?" To which he responded, Roger Stone, "You stupid, stupid bitch. Never denied perfectly legal back channel to Assange, who indeed had the goods on crooked Hillary." And then went on to say, in regard to the question about libel and slander, "Bring it. Would enjoy crush you in court and forcing you to eat shit, you stupid, ignorant, ugly bitch." Now, this is one of Donald Trump's dearest friends. And so, yeah, he got a timeout. But along the way, what got him so worked up is he claimed to have had, at relevant times, what he described as a perfectly legitimate back channel to Julian Assange. Meanwhile, yeah. What broke this afternoon, and the Angry Indian pointed it out to me, you know, Nigel Farage, whatever, that neo-fascist creep that led the Leave campaign in Great Britain?
Yeah, I dropped out there for a second, but so I missed the first part of your...
Nigel Farage has a long-standing back-channel relationship with Julian Assange, too.
Yeah, he was the guy who just went to the, what was it, the Peruvian embassy? Or
Ecuadorian.
Ecuadorian embassy, and the reporters afterward asked him why he had gone there, and he said, I don't remember.
Well, you know, gin will do that to the human brain, I guess.
Yeah, well.
But there's all this stuff out there, and I know the people who think that we've all been ponerized, and that big bad Vladdy Daddy is just a snuggly huggly little cuddly bear. I know they want to ignore it. But the fact of the matter is, there's a shit ton of smoke.
Oh, yeah, so there's got to be fire. I mean, come on. Well, I've never trusted, you know, it's that old theory about intelligence agencies. Like, I didn't like George Bush 41 because I didn't think it was proper for a former head of the CIA to be president, okay? And a similar concept was, I didn't think Gerry Ford should have been president because he sat on the Warren Commission, one of the biggest works of fiction since, shit, I don't know, Bambi, okay? And as far as Putin goes, he was a big mucky muck in the KGB and then its descendant in intelligence. The
FSB.
Okay. And plus his eyes are too goddamn close together, you know, which... I've never cared for that when I see it.
But it gets weirder. Now there's this business with the Russian bank. Alpha Bank. Which back in July was communicating with the Trump server in Trump Tower to the tune of 2,800 attempts to connect. Or 2,800 connections. Which was more than any other single entity connecting to that server. And when asked, we know nothing about this. It's inscrutable. It's difficult to understand.
Yeah.
Fuck off. 2,800 times. And I'm sorry, I remain convinced because, you know, after having been barked at by Trump, the for-profit media are largely way too silent on this. But we're finding out more and more and more that the stuff in the Golden Showers dossier, more and more of that stuff is proving true.
Well, it's probably going to be along the lines of how it was with Watergate, in the sense that you had maybe the Washington Post and to a lesser extent the New York Times and to a lesser extent the Los Angeles Times staying on the story before the rest of the media, before a tipping point is reached and the rest of the media has no choice but to start doing their fucking job, you know?
Well, yeah.
The trouble with that, though, is that was back in the early 70s. In this day and age, we may not have the luxury of time, you know, in terms of waiting long enough for the rest of the media
to catch up.
Yeah, to get their wretched act together, you know.
I think you'll probably come down on the same side of this as I do, Scott. I'm not saying, because there is entirely too much history for anybody who's paying attention to say, I'm not saying that the American intelligence community is lily white and or pure as the driven snow, or, you know, washed in the blood of Jesus, all of those metaphors. They aren't. There's too much history. The assassins who killed Berta Cáceres were trained at what we used to call the School of the Americas. God Almighty, Argentina, Chile, death squads in El Salvador, the coup against Mohammed Mossadegh in, what, 1952?
No, 53, I think.
Yeah. The Bay of Pigs. And yes, John Kennedy himself said, I want to break up the CIA into 1,000 tiny pieces. And shortly after the assassination of JFK, and you can still find it online, Harry S. Truman wrote a letter to the New York Times, a letter to the editor, that said that the national security complex had gone badly awry. These are all problems.
Yeah, and I think it was the Washington Post, and I think it was...
Maybe it was.
I don't think it was just a letter. I think it was an op-ed. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. So that is not to say that they are without sin. But by the same token, if one says that because of its sketchy history, everything they do is bad, then you have to throw out Valerie Plame, who is doing everything in her power to stop the rush to attack the innocent people of Iraq. You know, until Scooter Libby outed her. You have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You have to get rid of Richard Clark, who was doing everything in his power to say to George W. Bush, Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11.
See, another aspect of that also is that Rumsfeld and Cheney, during the run-up to the Iraq invasion, they did their best to keep all of the information and all the decision-making in military intelligence as opposed to the central intelligence, because they'd get a more favorable outcome if they dealt with the Pentagon end of it as opposed to the usual intelligence agency, in this case the CIA. And a lot of people don't know that. But I think it was Lawrence O'Donnell who was saying the other night that, you know, Trump really is out of his league here, well, in more ways than one, but in this particular way, you know, he doesn't even know enough to know better that the last people you want to be pissing off is an intelligence agency.
Maybe somebody should show him that movie. It's called Executive Action.
Oh, yes, I remember that movie.
From the early 1970s.
Robert Ryan, Burt Lancaster, Will Geer, and some others.
Yeah. No, the fundamental problem with Donald Trump is that he doesn't know what he doesn't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, bingo. I've even heard...
It's the Kruger-Dunning effect, writ large.
The a number of players, supposedly, in behind the scenes in the Kennedy assassination in 1963, interestingly enough, came to the fore during Watergate, not only the break-in, but as revelations began tumbling out over the months, a lot of those same names and figures kept cropping up in Watergate. And I have heard a theory, I forget what the motive was, but I've heard a theory that at that point, by 72, the summer of 72, it had become somewhat unfashionable to be shooting down your elected leaders. So instead of assassinating them in that way, we'll just kill off their reputation, and that the break-in of the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate was deliberately botched as a mechanism to ultimately bring Nixon down. And because there were so many current and former Central Intelligence types and FBI types involved in the Watergate break-in, that they were the perfect people to do that. And you wonder about that, but then you think about the tape over the lock on the basement door of the Watergate building where the Democratic office was. Frank Wills, or Willis, was making the guard at the Watergate, was making his hourly rounds or every other hourly round, and he saw a piece of tape holding open the little thing on the side of the door that sticks out to keep it from latching. And he knew that earlier in the day, painters or construction people had been in the building, and he figured they did that so they wouldn't have to call down for the key every 20 minutes. So he took away the piece of tape, okay? And then the next time he went around that night for his rounds, the door was taped again. And the interesting thing, it wasn't taped along the edge of the door in a vertical way. It was done in a horizontal way from one side of the door across.
Yeah,
the
from doorknob to doorknob.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is really indicative of a group that wanted to be discovered, you know? So who knows on that? I know I'm going a little far afield, but, you know, with the intelligence folks, one wonders. Yeah, they have a long history of shenanigans and dark arts, but then again, they might be useful in a pinch. This case, the pinch being, you know, the madman that we've got supposedly running things today.
Well, it seems the Punky is in complete agreement.
Yeah, well, I put him in the other room. He's been quiet all day, but he's like a kid. I get on the phone and it's like, But I love him.
Oh, of course.
He's
and you know, it's troublesome when you're down to the point of thinking that, you know, maybe the only hope for this republic is the national security apparatus. I mean, that's really creepy.
Yeah, it is, but then again, it isn't, because, you know, what was it? Sessions just demanded the resignation of, 46 U.S. attorneys that were appointed by Obama. Okay, in so many areas and centers of power in the country, we can see the systematic dismantling of something that it took a minimum of 8 years to build up. The other day, the guy sitting in for Lawrence O'Donnell had a guy from the State Department who was not asked to stay on, who literally was with the State Department for 40 years, certainly a professional in any way that you want to measure it, and he wasn't asked to stay on by the Trump administration. He wasn't fired, you know, he wasn't sent out to pasture. He just wasn't asked to stay on. So he figured now.
That was Rachel Maddow.
Oh, was it Maddow? I knew it was one of them. Okay. But the point of it is, we see so many different centers of power in this country where we can see signs of a dismantling occurring. Maybe it's a good thing that we've got the intelligence people and the national security people who are, some of whom who are responsible and grown up, to be there in a case like this. I don't know what that could lead to, or whether they would set something up, you know, after they cleared this crew out, but maybe not. Maybe their function would be, you know, to make sure that he doesn't go much further than he's already gone. It'll be interesting. That's the key. And it's good that some people do have a long memory, and it's good that some people are on the ball as far as keeping watch over the way things are going, because a large number of the populace either don't know or don't care, or an intriguing combination of both, you know. And, you know, when you've got people who know more about the contestants on Dancing with the Stars or Survivor or something like that, than do, you know, the people in charge of their own fucking government. You hope to hell that there are people who are in charge somewhere at some level.
Right, and the people, Scott, the problem arises, and you and I talked about this some, in trying to move some of these people out of power. I just had a tweet from Angel a little while ago. The 22nd district in California is my district, and this place is too damn red to vote that weasel Devin Nunez out. And that's, you know, that's what I was talking about when I said there has to be a targeted, granular approach to this. You've got to find people where the gerrymandering hasn't necessarily worked. And yeah. and by the way, last night, I guess it was it last night that I was talking to Laborman, and he was asking about the availability of numbers for, you know, who has health care through the ACA, who has health care through expanded Medicaid. Well, apparently the Kaiser Family Foundation has those numbers. And last night Chris Hayes did a very good job. He invited Steve King and Leonard Lance, two Republicans, one Leonard Lance from New Jersey, whom most of us have never heard of, and Steve Cantaloupes King, who says that Mexicans with calves like cantaloupes carry drugs into Merca.
Yeah.
That one. Well, Chris Hayes asked him, how many people in your district are on the Affordable Care Act exchanges? And Steve King said, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he said, well, the answer to that is 11,400 people. So then Chris Hayes asked, you got any idea what's going to happen to them under your bill? And Steve King said, nope, sure don't. And he said, of course, we don't have that data because, first of all, we just got to look at this bill that's been offered. Well, here's the reality. You can also go to acasignups.net, and that will tell you about who's on the exchanges. And out of the 585,305 people in Steve Cantaloupes King's district, 43,100 of them will lose their health care by a combination of the destruction of the Medicaid expansion and the loss of the subsidized exchanges.
And isn't it interesting, for like 7 years now, these fools have been, the mantra has been, Obamacare was shoved down our throats. Well, here's a distinction that Obamacare had, the process putting it into play, had that the current GOP care plan, so-called, doesn't. And this, the distinction is this. All throughout the House and the Senate activities to hammer out something that approached, you know, viable in terms of Obamacare, they had experts, they had testimony, they had hearings, and it was pretty elaborate, okay? And now what do we see? We see them work until 4:30 in the morning, in the dead of night, trying to sneak something through, you know, so that the rest of us, while we're sleeping, will be none the wiser. There's your one of your distinctions right there. And Steve King, who doesn't have any concept of anybody in his fucking district who would be affected by this, he doesn't know. He doesn't know. Oh, but we must take a look at this bill. We must weigh the merits of this bill, you know. And these are the people that propose to fix the healthcare system, which isn't exactly broken. It is exactly working for a fair number of people. That's not to say it can't be tinkered with and fixed. But since when have they been about that?
And it got even more interesting with Leonard Lance. Chris Hayes asked him, how about your district, Congressman? And like somebody on Jeopardy who just really has no idea. I'd say roughly 5,000 or so, Chris. Oh, too bad. 20,000 people are ACA enrollees in Leonard Lance's district. And a total under GOP care. I'm really pushing back against this idea of Trump care. I hate that son of a bitch, but I want Paul Ryan to own this because he's the dirty bastard who wants to throw people out of their health care. I want Mitch McConnell to own this.
Yeah. So well, it's, in terms of Paul Ryan, and he has the PowerPoint presentation to prove it. I mean, this is his baby. Well, he and Ayn Rand, any way you measure it.
And so it turns out in Leonard Lance's district, there's 38,063 people who are going to lose their health care under this godforsaken nightmare.
Well, here's an appropriate movie quote to kind of sum that up, what you just described. There was a movie, I think it was in 1964, that Henry Fonda and a very young Larry Hagman were in together called Failsafe. It was sort of the serious version of Dr. Strangelove in terms of its theme, which had to do with global nuclear destruction. And at one pivotal point in the bunker underneath the White House, Henry Fonda, who was the president, and Larry Hagman was the interpreter, and President Henry Fonda had the Soviet premier on the phone, and they're trying to hash through the imminent destruction of two great nations. And Henry Fonda asks, what do we say to the dead, Mr. Premier? What do we tell the dead? And that's the question that needs to be put to these bastards who are doing this, who are perpetrating this crime on humanity, the most vulnerable people in the country today. You know, that's the question. What do we say to the dead, Mr. Rand Paul? You know, what do we say to the dead?
And that's a beautiful expression, Scott. But it relies upon people having consciences, and you're going to have to work real hard to convince me that Paul Ryan, that Steve King, that Marsha Blackburn, Diane Black, Louis Gohmert, and any of these freaks have a conscience. What do you say to the dead? Nothing. They're dead.
Well, but my point, Bob, was to say, you know, the answer, the response may not be...
Hello?
Let's go to Steve, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Let's. Steve just checked in. We don't have a lot of time. Stand by, Scott. Hey, Steve.
All right.
Hey, I had a question about those numbers. Were those numbers sign-ups on the exchange?
Yeah, in the case of Steve King, those are ACA exchange.
Yeah, and the reason I ask that is because each of those signups doesn't represent one person. It could represent an entire family, so it could be much higher than that.
Well, I mean, the way it's written, and this is over at Think Progress. Roughly 11,400 people in King's district have obtained health care through an ACA exchange in his district, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Gotcha.
You have to list the number of people that are on the plan when you sign up for it. So that's how they count.
Oh, okay. Because I know, I mean, I'm on ACA in New York, I didn't remember if that was my only question was because I thought it might actually be more than what they're saying. Either way, it sounds like basically 1 in 10 people in his district are not going to have insurance within a week after that SOB votes for that bill.
Well, it's not going to be within a week. That's the other part of the blue smoke and mirrors that's involved here. It will happen over time. And they've got it, and they've got the timing of it set out so that they do not have to face any risk of anybody running around without insurance when the November 2018 midterms roll around.
You know what? Wouldn't you? You know what? If you're going to kill me, I'd just rather you cut my head off rather than giving me an infection. I hate these people. Shouldn't be that way, but I am.
That's more than forgivable by a long shot. Because if it's the people, Steve, who sit around and go, well, I guess it's the Obamacare's collapsing, and that's probably because, you know, he was black and grew up thinking that that the world owed him something, so naturally this ain't going to last. Well, that's too bad. I guess we'll just have to leave it to President Trump to make America great again. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm people probably get sick and tired of hearing me be such a little ray of sunshine. But I live among people who talk like that.
And you know what, Bob? There's no logical reason. What other explanation is there other than what you're saying? What else is there? I think I emailed the other night. I'm completely at a loss anymore. I'm just at a loss. Well, you know what?
Not to tell tales out of school. There's a woman I've had a lot of wonderful conversations with. We don't see eye to eye on everything, but we saw eye to eye on enough that we could have good conversations. She had a stroke. And she had some sort of insurance, but it wasn't enough because there are businesses all around this community now with gallon pickle jars collecting money, a dime, a nickel, a penny, a dollar, a fin, a 10, a 20, whatever, and it's mostly dollars at a time to cover for what insurance didn't.
How is this a debate right now? I mean, how can anyone look at that and think that's the norm, or that's okay, or that's how we should do stuff? I'm not kidding, and I'm not trying to be obtuse here. I am honestly at the point I don't understand. I don't understand. I don't understand that. And again, as I said the other night, I don't understand what Ryan et al. Are doing. I don't understand why. I mean, in the past, you can find plenty of times where people on any side of an issue, you could at least trust that they had a good faith basis for what they were doing. You might disagree with the outcome, but I think you'd be loath to find instances in which people actively sought to harm their fellow citizens.
Well, Steve, can I differ with you a little bit?
Absolutely. I'm not a sycophant.
I don't want you to be no damn sycophant about this. We are cursed with short lives. I don't know how many people there are within the reach of this conversation right now who were adults in the late 1940s and early 1950s. Statistically, it's bound to be a relatively small number. But the fact of the matter is, and I've heard this said a lot, the Dirksen building, the Dirksen Senate office building in Washington, D.C. is named for Everett Dirksen, a Republican senator who was known for his willingness to compromise and reach solutions for the good of America. Okay. And we're constantly sold this bill of goods about how compromise is the soul of governance. And, there's probably some truth in it. But the compromises with which I'm familiar and with which I am goddamn well sick and tired, I heard referenced this morning when on Morning Joe, when Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill took off their jackets in the Oval Office and rolled up their shirt sleeves and worked together for the good of America. Well, you know what that got me, Steve, and got you? That got us working till at least 67 years old to collect Social Security. That's what that got us. And in the meantime, and specifically answering your question, because we don't know, because it's hard to be aware of these sorts of history, there was an attempt in the ashes in the, of World War II, when the liberal democracies were being refounded in Western Europe and established in Japan, and all of them said, because, you know, they had hosted the damn war, well, we got to figure out a way to get medical treatment to everybody, so let's just have everybody. And out of that comes the British National Health Service, among other things. Okay. So the same Harry Truman tried to start the same conversation in the United States. And do you know what the response of the Republican Party was, Steve?
Probably not much different than it is now.
They hollered communism. They hollered socialism. They hollered it would be the end of American freedom. And they killed it. And so the next best thing, and it took, Jesus, 17 years or more, or less, around, till we could finally get the government to agree that at least old people or older Americans should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick after they're retired, because they're not going to have money for doctors. Because all they're going to have is Social Security or maybe a pension or something. And so you get Medicare. And Steve, from the minute that Medicare became law, the Republican Party has been howling, furious, mad, and swearing that it was murdering freedom in America. I've got an old book of Herblock cartoons from the 50s, the Eisenhower era. Eisenhower himself inveighed against universal single-payer health care, saying that it would destroy the medical health care delivery system in the United States because nobody would be willing to be a doctor anymore.
Point taken.
And I'm not jumping down your throat. I hope you don't think I am.
No, but you know what though, I'll agree. But it just doesn't seem to be. I don't know. I see that as. I don't know. It just strikes me as more of an honest policy difference than it is. I intend to hurt you. I mean, I was a member of congressional staff in 1996, right after the Gingrich Revolution, so-called, in my days as a member of the GOP, and yes, there was a time when, and what really began to turn me off was when religion became infused in politics on the right, and when just the nastiness and hatred and vitriol that Newton Leroy brought to Washington, which I frankly think we're seeing the fruits of today, that's when it began to get mean and personal. And as much as I can agree with you about, or acknowledge, I can't agree with facts are facts, acknowledge your take on what you just mentioned, it just didn't seem to be as malicious or in such with an intent to harm.
No, I won't disagree with you in that regard.
I mean, what motive could there be for what Ryan is doing other than I just don't like poor people? people. I don't want people to have what I've got. What's the thing you always say?
Igumfoo, I got mine. Fuck yeah. You.
Yeah. How is that? I mean.
Well, no, he's a true no, Steve. He's a true believer, and those are the most dangerous people on earth. He reads Atlas Shrugged like he reads the Bible, like it is received wisdom. Okay.
Yeah, and I always loved saying, well, you know, Ayn Rand ended up on welfare and on Medicare, by the way, and Medicaid, if I'm not mistaken.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hey, Sparky.
I've got a medical savings account story, if you want to hear it.
Oh, an HSA?
Yeah, through my local union.
Yeah.
When we got merged into Sacramento in 1998... We went into an option where we could put $2 an hour into a medical savings account, which if you're an active member, it was divided up so that you could only touch half of it if you weren't retired, and the other part was set up for retirement. So now I'm all the way there, but I haven't cashed out any of it. But from 1998 till I quit working in 2010, after, you know, because I had to take care of mom and dad, I had $23,000 in that account for all the hours I'd worked between there at $2 an hour.
And so what becomes
so
of it?
So you can see health savings accounts are just bullshit if you're a working person. I mean, how much money can you afford to put in it?
Right. And I saw a remark the other day. Healthcare savings accounts are for glasses, not chemo. So, Sparky, just out of curiosity, what happens to it? I mean, can you go to Vegas with Tracy
and draw on it? All I have to do is send in receipts, and I can draw on it.
But you can only draw on it for healthcare related stuff, right?
Correct. You have to prove you paid out the money before you can get a refund. It
yeah,
works
exactly.
Great. I've used it before.
Yeah,
when
it
I was
basically
still working
gives you
and Judy
reimbursement after the fact. You got to shell out the money first. So if you don't have the money, you can't incur the medical expenses that you need. So it kind of presumes you have the money. You know.
Yeah, I used it before to do some procedures because I used to have getting injections into my knee every 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, I mean, so it's something
wouldn't
that
bothered me at work, and that was like $750 every time I did it. I mean, for the whole procedure, I had to pay a cash because I didn't have, at the time I didn't have insurance, so I found out what it cost. So I used that health savings account to pay for that stuff because I'd been off work so long.
Yeah, and like if you have a colonoscopy, you can use it for the, you know, cost of going to the lab and so forth, the surgery center, and, you know, anesthesia, if you have to have anesthesia, that kind of thing, you know. But, I mean, it's clearly not something for major medical expenses. I mean, my HSA is like $2,500 a year or so, you know.
Yeah, and so what? So what percentage do you think, Rick or Sparky or anybody, What percentage do you think is an annual eye exam for a diabetic of the overall insurance payout in this country? God, it's probably not even statistically significant.
Maybe 1%, Bob.
You know, Sparky, could you use it for dental?
Yes.
Well. Hardly anybody has dental coverage. Dental is a cash only basis in this country. God knows why. But again, and I mean, you did it as an option. It came out of it came out of your earnings.
Well, I was everybody. You know, it was sold throughout the union, and it was a smart thing to do.
Yeah. But, you know, what if you're making $8 and a quarter an hour?
And then, well...
Not very realistic there.
Not very realistic.
No, you're not going to be able to afford the eye exam.
But, right. I mean, when you negotiate in your union and you have a total package and all the stuff the employer has to pay on top of that, he doesn't have to pay any employee taxes on that money either, you know. So he gets, the employer gets a break.
Right.
And, you know, the nice thing about it for the employee is you don't, you know, the money is taken out of your pay, but that doesn't count towards your taxable income, the amount taken out. But, you know, the only way to get even is to basically spend the money and then claim the reimbursement, you know?
Yeah, that's the way ours work. I mean, you got to spend the money and claim the reimbursement. And I've got couple of years of being on Covered California before I went on Medicare that I need to send in. I keep procrastinating on it and get the money back out of that account.
Yeah, it's a hassle to have to do it. Also, you know.
Yeah.
But I did it last year at the end of the year, you know.
And you know, we're going to, I trust we're going to find out, say, you know, Sunday afternoon. And this is something I have not yet discovered. In the course of putting together their AHCA, did the dumbasses get around to keeping the coal miners' black lung benefits in there? Or are those gone too? Because that's going to that's going to be an important question, say, Sunday afternoon in McDowell County.
Well, ask it if you get the chance.
Oh, it's way up on the damn list.
Yeah.
That and the absence of substance abuse treatment and rehabilitation
and mental health.
Yeah, it all goes away.
Yeah. What a great
Bob.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, yeah, Bob, there was a myth going around whenever I lived in Kingsport. That's where I was born and raised, up in Kingsport, Tennessee, up by Scott County, Virginia. I mean, there was a myth going around back in, I guess, the late 60s. That the only people that got black lung were the people that smoked cigarettes,
and that was perpetuated by the coal companies and their pet paid doctors from jump. But in point of fact, the coal industry and their pet paid doctors had known from jump that no, you didn't have to smoke to get black lung. And you know what's particularly fascinating is that when they moved over to more mechanized mountaintop removal practices, the coal industry said, well, this will be safer for miners because they won't have the black lung. Well, a couple of years ago, we found out in a study that black lung was spreading more quickly through mountaintop removal workers than it was through underground miners, because underground miners had finally been convinced to wear their damn respirators.
Yeah, Bob, my toxicology grad class kind of confirmed what you said. Coal miners are just so oversaturated in the coal dust, it doesn't matter. For the rest of the population, those who smoke are 10 times more likely. Sorry, but it's the rest of the population where it's 10% more popular.
Yeah, and now we have the new science, Snork, that shows that the proliferation of silica dust via the explosions on mountaintop removal sites is killing the hell out of people who just happen to live near it.
Silica is bad for a long way. White silica, it's little fragments and it gets in the lungs.
Well, when you look at it under a microscope, it looks like a tiny piece of jagged glass.
It's almost not too different from what's called tephra, just the little teeny snowflakes of volcanic material that get lofted into the air, which cause tremendous issues with lungs.
Right, and the particular and the smaller the size, the more deadly it is. Unfortunately, you're going
asbestosis.
Same principle. Unfortunately, y'all get the last word. I don't mean unfortunately, but unfortunately, we got to knock off because it's 9 o'clock. Sparky, is the group going to stay up and running? Are you going to head to the house?
I'm heading to the house, Bob.
Okay.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thank you, and all of you as well. Thank you to everybody who participated. Thank you for everyone jumping in and helping maybe get a little jump start on Monday. Thank you very kindly, and thank you very kindly to Paul from Parts Unknown, who finished off Tracy's Viva Las Vegas challenge. So thank you very kindly, Paul, and thank you, Tracy, for the challenge. Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Snork. Thanks, Steve from Georgia Stan, and thanks, Scott and Punky. Thank you, Steve, another member of the Fraternity of Steve from New York. Thanks, Larry, and thanks, Charlie, and thanks, Clarity, for jumping into the conversation this evening. And as well, always thanks to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky. And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time in participating in this program. I felt like crap when we started. I feel a lot better now. Y'all have that effect on me. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. And we'll get back at it for more and Monday on the 13th day of March, 2017. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.